4 years into the recovery from the Great Recession, what kinds of jobs are most available? A recent report from the National Employment Law Project finds the poor economy has replaced good jobs with bad ones. And a recent analysis done for Bridge Magazine in Michigan looked at the fastest growing jobs in this state and found that pay will be so low, many workers in full-time jobs would qualify for food stamps. Let's talk more about this now as we welcome Michigan State University economist Charles Ballard. Good to have you back on Stateside, Charlie.
Thanks. Glad to be with you.
And the president and CEO of the Michigan League for Public Policy, Gilda Jacobs, who also was a state legislator for many, many years. It's very good to have you with us on Stateside, Gilda.
So pleased to be with you. Thank you.
Charlie, how has this recovery differed from the period that followed the 2001 recession?
Well, I think the big difference is that the 2001 recession was fairly mild, as recessions go, and the recession of 07, 08, and 09 was by far the worst of our lifetime, the worst since the Great Depression of the 1930s, and so it just did a whole lot more damage. And we are still struggling to get back to the employment levels that we had, but since it did more damage, that sort of magnified the one of the effects that almost always happens during a recession, which is that the more highly skilled, more highly educated workers are the least likely to lose their jobs. And then those at the bottom of the skilled chain are the most likely to lose their jobs. And so the unemployment rate skyrocketed for those with only a high school diploma or those who are high school dropouts. And if you're unemployed for a very long period of time, it makes it that much more difficult to get back into the labor market.
And isn't it true that, you know, as we hear reports, we'll just talk about the U.S. economy, that the U.S. economy is rebounding. We hear that from Wall Street. We hear that from the White House. They're saying the unemployment is going down. But isn't some of that a mirage? Because don't the statistics stop counting those who have just given up in despair and stop looking?
Oh, in terms of the unemployment rate is now back down to about where it was before the Great Recession. But the unemployment rate, you only get counted as unemployed if you are in the labor market, meaning you're actively seeking work. And it is true that there are a lot of people who are, we call, discouraged workers. Then there's another category of folks, which is actually larger than the discouraged workers. Those are the people who want to work full-time. They're able to find employment, but it's only part-time employment. So if you include all of those folks, the level of sort of disemployment is much bigger than the simple unemployment rate would make it appear.
Gilda Jacobs is president and CEO of the Michigan League for Public Policy. What are your thoughts about the recovery path that Michigan is now on, 4 years in?
Well, thanks. That's a great question. You know, the fact is that the recovery has been good for some people in Michigan, but there are still so many people who are still reeling from the effects of that downturn where they are not feeling the effects of an economic recovery. So we have got so many low-income moms, wage earners, that are breadwinners in their families trying to support their kids, that are not able to do so. When you take a look at, like, 2 out of 5 low-income working households are headed by women, and almost a quarter of those people are mothers to young kids. So, yep, there has been a recovery in Michigan, but it's really been benefiting most of the people who are at the very top of the income scale. And the disparities in our state continue to grow.
Charlie, what's driving this growth of these low-paying jobs? And give us an idea of the kind of jobs that are expected to grow at such a fast rate.
Well,
go ahead,
projections,
Charlie,
of where the jobs are going to go, you should always take them with a grain of salt, because we don't know exactly what the trajectory will be. But it has been true for some time that there's been a lot of growth of jobs at the top and jobs at the bottom, mm-hmm. and unfortunately not as strong growth in the jobs in the middle of the income spectrum. You ask what kind of jobs. We're talking about retailing jobs, fast food jobs, that sort of thing, relatively low-skilled. But as I said, at the other end of the spectrum, there is strong demand for engineers, strong demand for people with computer science skills. What we need to do is try to strengthen that middle class, and I've always put a huge emphasis on the importance of education for preparing people for a more of a middle-class employment.
Yeah, and I really, to add to that, it is really talking about the need to ramp up our investments in education, because if you really take a look at the last 10 years or so, we're cutting higher education. Tuition has doubled. I don't know if you know anybody that has to send their kids to school or is starting to save for their kids. It's a pretty frightening prospect. Where K-12 education has been increased a little bit, inflation way outpaces the amount of money that has been added to the K-12 budget. Take a look at our general fund. That's down by 25%. Revenue sharing has been slashed. So if we're going to make the investments that will have eventually a positive impact on employment, we've got to start doing that right now. If you take a look at the highest occupations that are employing people right now, where there's the greatest amount of workers,
right.
You look at retail salespeople, office clerks, cashiers, registered nurses. Those are like sort of the four top occupations in terms of being employed in our state. And registered nurses, they obviously fare the best, but the others are having a very hard time being able to support their families. They're just not making enough money.
So we're looking, what, $10, $11, $12 an hour?
Well, this is back from 2012, but sales clerks are making about $10 an hour, office clerks a little over $13, cashiers $9 an hour. Registered nurses, they do great, $30.69 an hour.
So what I'm hearing is this: the debate we're having over the minimum wage and should it be $9.40 an hour, should it work its way up to $10.10 an hour, at any rate, that still doesn't get people up to maybe the level where they need to be.
No, absolutely not. And a lot of people who are in low-wage jobs or minimum-wage jobs still need to access public services to make ends meet. They still, many of them can qualify to get food assistance or some cash assistance. So if you are doing the right thing in our state, you're playing by the rules, you're trying to do what everybody wants you to do, you still can't make ends meet.
One of the policies that I think is a really important one is the earned income tax credit. And we in Michigan, to our credit, 7 years ago, joined about 20 other states that had topped up the federal EITC, and we augmented the federal EITC by 20%. And that could make a substantial difference to the folks in low-income working families. Unfortunately, in 2011, one of the things that we did was we scaled it back. There were those who wanted to eliminate it entirely. Gilda was one of the leaders in the fight to keep at least a part of it, and it was cut back from a 20% top-up to a 6% top-up. I think Gilda and I would both love to see it back where it was, because the earned income tax credit is a policy that not only really makes a big difference to the lives of working poor, but it also has been shown to stimulate employment. It's actually a policy, unlike sort of old-style welfare programs, which honestly do have some negative employment effects, the earned income tax credit leads to a greater level of employment because it's a subsidy to the earnings of these working poor families. And so that's a direction that I would really like to see us go back to.
And, you know, another interesting thing about the EITC is that that has a direct correlation to lifting kids out of poverty, but doing better in school and actual high school completion, which there is a direct connection between that, as well as Charlie says, sort of stimulating the economy, the local economy in particular. So, yeah, the restoration of the earned income tax credit, it doesn't cost that much, quite honestly, but it has huge, huge effects.
If you've just joined us, that was the president and CEO of the Michigan League for Public Policy, Gilda Jacobs. And she's joined by Michigan State University economist Charlie Ballard. As we take a look at the kinds of jobs that are available in Michigan, it seems a lot of jobs, but a lot of these jobs really don't give enough of a wage for people to be able to support their families, where they wind up needing state support. And there's certainly, it seems like what I'm hearing is pay it now or pay it later. Either let's look at, you know, stopping the disinvestment in education so people are coming out trained better for these better jobs, or we're going to be paying in terms of state support.
I think you're absolutely right. And the sort of backloaded policy of cutting taxes now and reducing our investment both in human capital, both in education and also in transportation infrastructure, that policy, I think it's penny wise and pound foolish. You look at transportation; we've disinvested in roads and bridges, and then it costs more down the road to fix one after it's badly deteriorated. Sort of the same thing with the education system. If you don't invest early, you're going to have children who have fallen behind, and trying to fix the situation when that child is much older is a whole lot more expensive than getting in on the ground floor and really making the early investments that are so important. That's why I'm glad at least one policy that we've made that I think is a move in the right direction is the expansion of slots in early childhood education.
Right, and that will have far-reaching effect on these kids later on. So that's probably one of the best return on investments that we can make. Is with the expansion of early childhood education.
But that's a start.
It's just a start. I mean, I think we really have to also look at tax policy in general. You know, what we've done is we've taken the same pie and just shifted it around. We're not increasing the pie, if you will, and our some of our important services, we'd like to say, are on starvation diets in Michigan. There's really, as I said before, really been a disinvestment. So we really need to take a look at tax policy. Is it really adequate to provide the services that we need and to get the best return on investment on some of the things that we know really work?
Have we become in Michigan a two-class state in terms of economic stability, Charlie?
Well, Michigan is actually quite common. We are very similar to most states across the country, where what's happened in the last 40 years has been that the economy has grown. In fact, the U.S. economy is more than twice as big as it was in the early 70s. And yet, the median man who works full-time year-round earns less now than in 1973. And that's just one of many statistics that I could give you that show that there's been a growing economy, but it's been growing only for those above the median. And the farther you get above the median, the better it's been. It's for if you're at the 90th percentile, times have been good. If you're at the 99th percentile, times have been fabulous. And this is a nationwide phenomenon, and actually the pattern in Michigan is rather similar to the national average, where the top has pulled away from both the middle and the bottom.
Yeah, and if you also take a look at the statistics, there has been a huge increase, uptick in poverty throughout the state, and in particular, kids living in poverty. When you have half of the kids in our state that are on free or reduced lunch, that tells you that this economy has not been recovering for everybody and that there really are two different classes of people in our state.
When we talk about these low-paying jobs that are going to be growing at such a fast rate in Michigan, the restaurant jobs, the service workers, the health care support, buildings and grounds and maintenance workers, those jobs aren't going to go away. So how do we make them better? Charlie?
Well, we've mentioned things like the earned income tax mm-hmm. credit and the minimum wage, both of which could take that same job and boost its pay. Another thing that I think is very important, Gilda and I have both talked a lot about education. And if you have a better education system, then you'll have more people who are able to compete for the top jobs and fewer people who really have no choice but to compete for the bottom jobs. And if really your skill level is so low that the only thing you can do is to either be a laborer or a low-skilled job, then you're really in a very tight spot. You don't have much bargaining power relative to any employer. I would love to see the market wages for those low-skilled jobs increase by changing the relative scarcity of high-skilled workers and low-skilled workers by having more high-skilled workers. And even regardless of what happens to the market, I think we need to keep an eye on our wage-setting institutions, things like the minimum wage and the earned income tax credit, to try to boost those folks at the bottom.
And, you know, there's another thing that sometimes gets lost when we talk about low-wage workers. So many of them get no sick time off. Or if they have to go take care of a child that's sick, they are afraid to leave their job even for one day because it may mean that they're going to lose their job. And there is no flexibility built into these jobs. So, you know, I used to be a legislator. We talked about we wanted parents to be more involved in their children's lives, and yet nowhere do we build in the ability or flexibility with people to be able to take an hour off to go to a parent-teacher conference or to not send their child to school if they're sick. Or if you're sick and you're working in the restaurant business, you still go because you're worried that you're going to lose your job. Those are changes that don't cost a lot of money, but really improve the quality of life and the working conditions for people who don't have that built into their job.
Gilda, would that be legislated, and then wouldn't business say, well, Lansing, you can't tell us what to do, what kind of policy? I mean, I'm sure this is a conversation you've had.
But you would hope that businesses would get that and understand that because, you know, as a business person, you don't want to have a big turnover of your employees. And if you can set up a situation where there is some bit of flexibility where somebody doesn't worry about being fired and then the employer has to worry about training somebody new again, that's something that employers should really want to embrace.
Michigan State University economist Charles Ballard joined us, and the president and CEO of the Michigan League for Public Policy, Gilda Jacobs. Thank you so much to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Of course, we love to hear from you, find out the stories you're focused on, the people you want us to profile, the issues you care about. Let us know. Find us on Facebook. You can search for Stateside with Cynthia Canty. We're on Twitter at Stateside Radio. And as always, you can find us at michiganradio.org. Click on the link that says Stateside.